Welcome to the Pool Nation Podcast, where it's all pool talk. And we ain't talking about netting and jetting or splashing and dashing. We're talking about becoming a nation of pool pros. We talk about the latest products, trends, and training in the pool industry. Now let's welcome your host, with over a decade of industry insider experience and still the reigning champion of Marco Polo, Edgar De Jesus, and his co-host, John J.J. Flawless, the fastest netter in the West, and Zach the Pool Boy Nicholas.
Welcome, everyone, to the Pool Nation Live podcast with myself, your host, Edgar De Jesus. And yes, I am the reigning champion of Marco Polo, along with John J.J. Flawless, the fastest netter in the West, and the famous Zach, the pool boy, Nicholas. Every month, we have the pleasure of having Bob Lowry join us on our podcast to answer some questions that are sent from you pool guys out there and pool girls. And this week is that week. So a big welcome to Bob. For those of you that know Bob, you know he's a legend in our industry. For those of you that are new to the pool industry, Bob has written 21 books in pool water chemistry, and even the manuals that YPSA uses for training were written by Bob. He's also the founder of the Pool Chemistry Training Institute. You can visit the site at pcti.online. We'll talk about that in today's podcast. I want to welcome everyone to our live podcast, the podcast where it's all pool talk, and we ain't talking about netting and jetting or splashing and dashing. We're talking about becoming a nation of pool pros, and yes, we will talk about the latest products, trends, and training in the pool industry. Before we get started today, I want to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Ultimate Pool Tools, Pool Invoice, and thepoolmanuniversity.com. I want to thank them for their continued support. I also want to thank our newest sponsor that will be joining us soon, Hasa. We are very excited to have you on. Thank you so much for your support. Zach, good morning.
Good morning, Pool Nation. I'm pumped for another round of water chemistry talk today because this is a topic that no matter how many times we discuss it, I continue to learn more. And right now, our pools have been smooth sailing because of the cold, but we know that summer is going to be here sooner than later. So we want to make sure we're properly equipped with the knowledge to be able to combat the issues that we know are going to arise.
Yes. John, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Just to tag on to what Zach says, I look forward, we've been doing these podcasts now for a little while, but I look forward to these monthly podcasts with Bob because it doesn't matter how much you think you already know. Every time we have these podcasts and we go through these questions, there's always some nugget of information that I get to take away, and I'm sure everybody else does. So just looking forward to another wonderful session about water chemistry.
John, Zach, listen to this before I say good morning to Bob. I think this is going to be probably the perfect introduction. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bob.
Ladies and gentlemen, the moment that we have been waiting for. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning from Lima, Peru. Or as they say here, buenos dias, ¿qué tal?
Buenos dias, ¿qué tal?
I am here. I am honored to be here. I'm happy to be here. And I love, you know, water chemistry is my passion. And I love talking about it. We can get on with it. Let's talk about water chemistry.
Absolutely. So we're glad to have you on, Bob. These are always our favorite podcasts because, like John said, there's always a lot of learning that we do. Guys, before we get started today, I'm going to talk about something that I talked about last week, and I want to get everybody's opinion. John, I really want to hear your reaction. So obviously, we're on a podcast, so be vocal. I want you to get your first reaction that comes out of you. So for you guys that listen live and you use the instant message board, guys, I want you to kind of message me through there. But let me bring Bob up to speed on my story. So Bob, in the last podcast, I talked about how bummed I was that my daughter was going off to college, and so I thought I was prepared for it, kind of reality kicked in. And so now this Tuesday, she's going to OU to do a campus visit. So I'm not even going to get into that. But this time what they're going to do is she's going to go with my wife. They're going to go the night before. They're going to spend the night. And then the next day they go and they do the campus visit, right? So here's where I want people to tell me if I'm overreacting or not. So she has every night she comes into our room kind of towards the end of the night with her dog. And we kind of have this routine and we're talking and all that. She's on the bed and she's like, Dad. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, I'm going to make you a promise. And she's pointing at me with her finger. And I'm like, yeah, what's that? And she goes, I promise you that I'll come home from school at least once a month. And I'm like, what? My wife is like, oops, you shouldn't have said that. And I was like, so shocked. My first reaction was like, absolutely, tell her, you know what? You're grounded. But I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I'm 18, right? So, so guys, you listening that have gone through this, you know, please tell me if I am overreacting or if this is what is coming my way, because I don't think I'm prepared.
I don't know. I think I would have responded and said, you know, you got to give us notice when you're going to do that because we're renting out your room.
Oh, man, that would have been a perfect answer.
That would have been such a great reply.
John, I think I'm going to tell it. John, he gave me an idea. I think now I'm going to tell her that I'm going to turn her room into a podcast studio.
Oh, I mean, to be honest, Edgar, I mean, I seriously, I cannot blame you. I mean, I'm personally dreading the day my little girl leaves our house. She's a great person, though, and I know she'll do well, you know, but it's hard to imagine the day. But I know that it's coming soon, man. It's going to be tough. So, I mean, all I can really say, Edgar, is just, you know, hang on. You know, I'm mentally preparing for it, but I know there's nothing that's going to happen. You just can't prepare for that day when one of your kids, you know, they leave the house. And, you know, maybe one of my boys, because a couple of them are knuckleheads and I can't wait for them to go, you know. But my daughter, she's such a sweetheart, you know, and I think I'm going to be devastated. You know, it's always tough when the first one goes, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, and I have my oldest, which is a boy that laughed, but I think it was kind of more like the, you know, you kind of the boy thing. Yeah, you go on, you know, yeah, conquer right. The world or whatever. Exactly. With the girls, you're kind of a little bit more protective. And I'm like, I'm ready. I handled Dylan well. I'm good. And man, it's hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. And of course, Zach is just sitting quiet back there because his kids are little, John. So he's got plenty of years to worry about it.
But it creeps up.
Yeah.
Quick.
I can't add anything to it. Believe it or not, I never had any kids. So I've not experienced any of the parental thing that you guys are talking about. Don't know anything about it.
It hurts. It hurts, Bob. So, all right, guys, let's get off my drama issues here. And let's kind of get this podcast started before I just kind of keep going on my rant.
Yeah, Edgar, I'm going to put you in timeout right here so we don't forget to talk about Bob's water chemistry certification class. So take some deep breaths, go to your happy place, and regroup while I talk about Bob's certification.
Oh, I'm going to mute myself here and just kind of sit quiet in my timeout.
Yeah, just relax for a minute. So, all right, guys, Bob's next water certification is going to be on January 30th, and that's at 8 a.m. Central, right, Bob?
No, yes, Central, it's 8 a.m., yes.
Okay, so 8 a.m. Central. And guys, this water chemistry class is such a good class. All of us here at the Pool Boys are certified. Well, we were all certified. However, we just welcomed two new people to the team, so we'll be arranging for them to get their certifications during the upcoming class. And I've got to say that we just love this certification and everything that we have learned from it, because this is a class that you're going to take and you'll start using what you learn right away. I mean, it's a complete game changer. So make sure you go to register at pcti.online or go to the Poolman University. And on the right-hand side, there's a banner. You click on that and it'll direct you to the registration page. All right, Edgar, I hope you're ready to go. It's all you.
Now that I'm out of this, you know, timeout, and for you ladies that are commenting on there, I was just reading as I was kind of in my timeout, so I appreciate
it, ladies. I'd like to add one thing to what Zach said.
Absolutely.
And I know that some guys are considering whether or not they should do a CPO class or do the pool chemistry certification class. And the two classes are not the same thing. The CPO course has about 50 pages of chemistry, and I'm being generous when I say that because a lot of that information that's in there is just stock stuff. And our class is 8 hours of chemistry with a book that's 226 pages long. In addition, there's a second book that's 28 pages long. So we've got 250 pages of chemistry and 8 hours to tell you about it. And the two aren't the same when you come, when you finish a CPO class. Most guys are saying, yeah, I know that. And that's kind of it. But it allows you to take care of a commercial pool. And in the case of taking the pool chemistry certification class, as Zach said, the next day you will be implementing and using what you learn in class. And not only will it make taking care of your pools easier, you'll understand them better, and you're going to save money. And believe it or not, I'll mention this to you. I had a guy that's a service guy that owns a company, and he got a copy of one of our books called The Pool Chemistry for Service Pros. He got that book, and he said, I have 238 people, customers, and he said, I have six guys taking care of those pools, and we started following your book and doing what you say in your class. He said, in 4 months, we have saved $30,000. And that just makes you stand up and go, what? And he said he saved $30,000 in 4 months. That's awesome. And that goes right to the bottom line is profit. So you can start doing this right away and start making money and knowing chemistry better and knowing what to do on every pool you go to.
I got to say too, Bob, like as a testament, we took that education and the guys are just so much more confident in their dosing and what they're doing because they actually have a direction that they're heading in with these targets. And it makes it so much easier for them to get through their day and keep that consistency. I mean, immediate boost of confidence to the guys. So I'm all in and I'm excited to get the new guys on it too.
Sure. Great.
That's great. Yeah. And John has said it as well. It's really one of those that you go, you take the class, and you're going to implement the next day the stuff that you get. So, Zach, I'm feeling a little bit better after my timeout, so I appreciate that. I
think
that
welcome back.
I started thinking about it again. So I think it's time to move on. So, guys, did you see the Instagram Live that we did on Wednesday with Mike from Mikey's Quick Coupler?
Oh, yeah, man. I absolutely loved it. And to be honest, it was one of the best we've done. Period. I love seeing everyday guys and gals doing great things. I really think Mike has a winner there. I've personally benefited from his product, and I know that everyone will one day. Looking forward to helping him in any way we can so we can get his product out ASAP. Mike's an inspiration and proof in the pudding that anyone can make it happen if they put in the work.
Yeah, and I caught the tail end of it where John was talking about how awesome it was and how it saved him from like a massive replumb. I still have to go back and watch the beginning, but I can see how every service fan should have a couple of these on hand. And I think it's a very cool product.
Yeah, Bob, Mike from Mikey's Coupler created basically a union that just is two pieces. So you don't have to replumb. It comes in two pieces. You put it together, you screw it on, and you're done. And what I can't believe is that, you know, we're in 2021 and I talked about it on the Instagram Live and I just can't believe that nobody's come up with that idea yet. It's just insane. Of course, I wish I would have come up with the idea, but I'm just baffled that, you know, you have so many companies like Hayward, Jandy, you know, Water, all those, and nobody's ever thought of doing that.
No, really, right? And it's a game changer, right? And that's the big thing about it. It's such a genius idea. You know, and it's so simple, and it's just like you said, Edgar, it's like, wow, why didn't anybody actually ever think of that? You know, and it's just mind boggling. Our industry and just about every other industry, right? Time is money. This product is all about saving you time, right? So we might not need to replace or replumb a broken union every day or every week, but trust me, if you're working on pools, you definitely will find yourself in a situation where you will. I personally used it this week. And I've had it now. I think I spoke with Mike months ago, and he sent me a couple of the unions, and I had them on my truck. I haven't had an opportunity to use them, like I said, this week. And if you can picture this plumbing, it was just unbelievable. It was two separate systems. It was a pool in the backyard, and it was a spa in an atrium, and they were both sharing a heater. And the plumbing was like an octopus. right? And there was maybe, I don't know, there was probably about 50 feet of plumbing in like a 4-foot by 4-foot area, the way they had valves and stuff changed. And it was crazy. And the salt cell was an old knockoff, like Hayward salt cell. It was something called Pure something, or it was weird. And it was underneath all this octopus fittings and piping, and it was up against the wall, the stucco wall, and it was connected to like some anti-calcifying, like snake oil type contraption thing that looked like a oversized check valve, and it was hooked up to a flow lock. So it was copper piping, and then it went up to 1.5, and then it went to 2-inch to go into, and it was up against the wall. And I'm a big guy, and I can't really get into places, so I couldn't crawl under or anything. So I had to literally reach and hang over with my fingertips, trying to get to the salt cell to get it in there and to tighten it. And sure as hell, it broke and it snapped. And in order for me to replumb it, I would have had to dig a hole, because the flow lock was already at the ground, and I would have to, you know, put a new flow lock onto the copper pipe and then try to get my big ass in there to replumb this. And it would have taken me at least 2 hours. But I had Mike's quick coupler, and then I got it off the truck. I went over there and I popped it right on, and literally it took me less than 5 minutes and I had it fixed. Otherwise it would have been 2 hours for me to fix it. And, you know, it's the biggest issue was it was on my service route. So usually we do repairs on Tuesdays and Fridays. So we did the, you know, if we do like an install, we'll do it on Tuesdays or Fridays or any kind of repairs. But this happened to fall on a service day where we had like 30 or 40 pools that we were taking care of between Janie and I. And to go to a pool and on your service route and to have an issue like that, you can't afford 2 hours worth of downtime, because nobody's going to be doing your pools. You know, you still have 10 more pools that you need to get done, and they're all getting backed out. So I just want to say it was a lifesaver for us that we're able to reach into the truck and then do, you know, do a 2 hour fix in less than 5 minutes. And then not only that, but saved the customer hundreds of dollars, because it would have cost a lot of money for us to have to replumb all that for the customer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was great. It was it's ingenious. It really is. And it worked perfectly. So I'm a believer.
Well, I hope he protected his market and so on, so that somebody doesn't steal his idea and start, pumping him out. So
yeah, he did. He kind of went through the whole patent process and all that. So I also want to thank Catalina Pools Arizona. They jumped on and they shared their story as well. And I think it's a game changer for a product. And hopefully he'll get all the other ones out for like the backwashes and the filters and all that soon. So, all right, guys, let's get started with today's podcast, because we've been talking for like 18 minutes and we haven't even started talking to Bob yet. So, Bob, let's just kind of jump in, and I'm going to shoot the first question that was sent to me. And that was, can you ask Bob, what is the perfect pool water chemistry?
And the answer is none.
None.
Well, actually, you know, people want to know what's perfect. And actually, I can give you the water conditions that are perfect. And we shoot for targets. You've heard some of the guys say that we're talking about target pool chemistry. And what we've done is we've taken the ranges that you see plastered every place you turn around, that the pH should be 7.2 minimum, ideal 7.4 to 7.6, and maximum 7.8, and taken that confusing thing and just made it one number, one target. And so the target for pH is 7.5. And that's what your target should be. And if it's very far away from it, then you need to change it. And you need to get it back on target. And so we have targets for everything. And we target pH at 7.5. We target total alkalinity at 90. We target calcium hardness at 350 for plaster pools, or, as a friend of mine used to say, for cementitious pools. For anything that's not cementitious, meaning vinyl, acrylic, fiberglass, stainless steel, eco finish, whatever, the calcium level should be 250. And we target cyanuric acid at 50 maximum. It can be higher if you have a saltwater chlorine generator. Cyanuric acid can go up to 70. We put in borates. Borates are a great idea. And you put them in once, and then only after you've lost a big amount of water do you need to add it again. But you put borates in at 50 parts per million. Again, if you have a saltwater chlorine generator, we go up to 70 parts per million. It just seems to work better. The borate prevents the pH from going up. And the other thing it does is it prevents algae. It's an algistat. It's not an algicide, it's an algistat. But by preventing algae, it means that chlorine doesn't have to do it. So you will use less chlorine to maintain the residual. And then speaking of residuals, we want the chlorine level to be at 5% of the cyanuric acid level. So if you follow that program, you will have balanced water. It will stay relatively stable without anything changing. And that's the goal as a service tech, is to make your pool stable. And by that we mean nothing's going to change. And so you follow the guidelines that we suggested. And then my personal choice would be to use liquid chlorine. And part of the reason, or the reasons for doing that, are that liquid chlorine is chlorine right now. You can, when you add it, it will raise the pH of the pool, but the following days when the chlorine is being used in that process, it produces acid, and the amount of acid is equal to the amount of hydroxide that's in the liquid chlorine when you pour it in. So they offset each other. So you can use liquid chlorine and nothing's going to change in the pool. pH isn't going to change. The cyanuric acid isn't going to change. So, and if you have the right alkalinity, the right cyanuric acid, and add borate, the pH isn't going to change. So we've made a pool that's stable and it's in balance. And so that is the way that you make a perfect pool. And you can be slightly off in any of those readings, and still have okay water and it not be a problem. So it's not so specific that you say, oh my God, the pH is 7.4, what do I do? Well, you know, if it was 7.4 and it's supposed to be 7.5, probably nothing. But if it's 7.8 or 7.2, now you need to change it. You need to fix it. There's a little leeway in that, but those are the targets we shoot for. And if you get to those targets, you'll make a stable pool.
So, Bob, we had another question that came in. What type of filter would you recommend? Sand, cartridge, or DE? Do you have any favorites over one, or you think one's better for the
pool? Well, you know, part of that has to do with the plumbing and hydraulics of the pool. But, you know, to start out with the best filter that there is, the best filter in our industry is a diatomaceous earth filter. And theoretically, and even in practice, it will filter down to 1 micron in size. And that is incredible. A cartridge filter will filter down to 8 to 10 microns. So technically, it's a 10 times worse filter than a DE. Or a DE is 10 times better than a cartridge. And then you go to sand, and a sand filter will filter 25 to 30 microns. So 25 to 30 microns is a 30 times worse filter than a DE filter. So pools that sparkle and snap and look great, that means the water's filtered great. And DE filters provide that. However, in years recently, they've come out with new media. And so there is different polyesters that you can get for cartridge filters. We still use DE. There is a replacement for DE. Then there is a couple of replacements for sand. One of the best ones is glass. And this is some incredibly manufactured glass. And they claim that you can make a filter, a sand filter, filter down to 5 microns.
Wow.
And still have the same flow and everything that you had with the sand filter. And if that's the case, that would make a sand filter into a great filter. It'd be right in between a DE filter and a cartridge filter. So part of it has to do with the plumbing that's existing. Part of it has to do with economy and whether or not you, if you use a DE filter, you're going to need a bigger pump because it needs more pressure and more flow to get through, to push that water through that filter medium. So also there is a, with the DE filter, when you backwash the filter, you lose the diatomaceous earth and you have to put it back. And that is a little bit hazardous if you breathe some of the DE, but aside from wearing a mask is practically all you need to do. It is a particle, so if you put on a particle mask, the DE won't go through it. So you can wear a mask and do it, and some gloves, and put the DE back. It's, DE is only hazardous if you breathe it. It gets in your lungs and causes problems. So you can take a spent DE and put it on your flowers, for that matter. But it's not hazardous waste. So you have choices. And if you want better filtration with a sand filter, you can simply change the filter media to glass. If you have a cartridge filter, you have a couple of choices of cartridge. But if you're not happy with the clarity of the water, then you either need to change the media or get a new pump. I mean, get a new filter. But it depends on budgets and hydraulics, I guess is the best way to say it.
John, do you have a lot of sand filters in your route?
Zero.
What about you, Zach?
No sand filters. And it's about a 50-50 mix of DE versus cartridge. And us personally, we've been actually moving a little bit more towards the cartridge filters. We used to be really heavy on the DE, but one, just because of the handling of DE and guys and stuff, we want to try to mitigate risks and just, you know, put them in a safer environment. And then also just for water loss, because, you know, constant backwashing, we are removing a lot of water and we're trying to create that more stable pool throughout the year. Because our borates, I don't know what it is about our market, but our borate levels are really hard to maintain. Like we constantly are having to add borates to the water. And I don't know if it's evaporation or the amount of rain. I mean, I'm sure it's just a mix of everything. But one of the ways we've looked at eliminating that is by just eliminating the backwashing on those pools.
Yeah, that may be the case. You know, if your borate levels are going down, even if your calcium levels are going down, if you notice things like that are going down, it's water loss. And it's either because you're backwashing or you've got a leak, but people don't realize they have a leak because they have an autofill. And the autofill fills it back up as it's leaking out, and people don't even know. And I got a call from a guy. He said, can you tell me why my calcium level and my alkalinity are going down in my pool? He said, I just don't understand it. And, you know, we tried different things and talked about tests. And a couple of weeks later, I said, you know, you've got a leak in this pool. And this is what your problem is. And if you turn the autofill off, you're going to find out that you're losing a lot of water. And as it turns out, he did that, and he was losing 4 inches of water a week. And when you lose that kind of water, the conditions in the pool change.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely something to look for. So, Bob, the next question is, I am new to the industry, and I have heard some people talk about chlorine lock, and some say that it is not a thing. Is chlorine lock a real thing?
Well, chlorine lock was a term invented, believe it or not, by the people that didn't make trichlor back when trichlor was introduced into the pool industry. And that was back in the late 1950s. And in the mid 60s, it became real popular to use trichlor. And there was a big push to use it. And it caught the other companies, not so much with their pants down, but caught them by surprise. And they combated that by saying, well, the cyanuric acid will lock up all your chlorine and your chlorine won't be working in the pool. And that persisted forever. People still think that there is chlorine lock. But the truth of the matter is this. When you put cyanuric acid in the pool at any amount more than 30 parts per million, somewhere between 3% and 1% of all that chlorine that you put in the pool is the only part that's free. Somewhere between 99 and 92% of the chlorine that's in the pool is bound to cyanuric acid. And when it's bound to cyanuric acid, it is not killing anything. It's not in the water doing anything. But, and the term that you will hear most often today is that only 3% of your chlorine is doing anything. And that number is pretty well correct. Only 3% of all the chlorine that you put in the pool is doing anything at this moment. But the fact of the matter also is the 97% and the 3% are in equilibrium. And what that means is that as some of the free chlorine that's in the pool, the 3%, when some of the 3% is used, some of the 97% instantaneously switches over to keep that ratio of 97 to 3. And so the answer is that, yeah, your chlorine's locked up with cyanuric acid, but it's available as the free chlorine in the pool is used. So as the 3% is degraded by killing bacteria and algae and living things, or is destroyed by sunlight, some of the 97% switches over and it becomes free chlorine in the pool. And that ratio of 97 and 3% persists until there's no more chlorine in the pool. So all the way down to zero. So yes, your chlorine is, quote, locked up. It's bound to cyanuric acid, but it's not bound in there and not available forever. It's bound to cyanuric acid and available at 3% at a time.
Amazing. I'm glad they asked that question, because that at the beginning, I remember starting in the pool industry and always listening to people at the pool store kind of talk and go, oh yeah, I got this pool with this chlorine lock. And then you'd have the other people go, no, it's not. And so great explanation. Bob.
But as the pH goes up and as the cyanuric acid level goes up, that 3% actually goes even lower. And so you can have 2% or even 1%. Under some conditions, you can have only 1% of the chlorine available. So that 1 and 3% is critical. But the good news is that it only takes 0.05 parts per million of free chlorine to kill algae. Seriously, 0.05 parts per million to kill algae. That's all it takes. But when you take 3% of, say, 2 parts per million of chlorine in the water, guess what? 3% of 2 parts per million is 0.06 parts per million of HOCl, except that the pH of the water also determines the portion of the chlorine that is HOCl and the part that's OCl minus, the killing form and the non-killing form. And at a pH of 7.5, 50% of the chlorine that's in the water is HOCl, and 50% is OCl minus. So that means that only 1.5% of the chlorine that's in the pool is HOCl. Now let's multiply 1.5% times 2 parts per million. And the answer is 0.03. And I just told you that it takes 0.05 to kill algae. So you need more chlorine than 2 parts per million. And even 3 parts is only close, because 3 parts per million times 1.5% is 0.045. And we said we needed 0.05. So it's almost there. So it would take 3 parts per million or more to prevent algae in that pool. And that's the problem with the ranges that the PHTA and the things that you see printed, that's the problem with these ranges. 2.0 parts per million is not enough to kill algae. 4 parts per million is fine because 1.5% of 4 is 0.06, which is more than enough chlorine to kill algae. So 2 parts is not enough, 4 parts is plenty. 3 is okay, probably. So we can calculate that each time, but the real answer is if you use borate in the pool, then we suggest that you use a chlorine level in the pool that's 5% of CYA. And if you're not going to use borate in your pool, then you use 7.5% of CYA. And that will ensure that you've got enough chlorine in the pool to prevent algae. And algae are harder to kill than bacteria. So if you kill the algae, you definitely kill the bacteria. So that's the way we did it. That's the way it's calculated. And if you keep that 5% or 7.5% in the pool, that's all you need to do. And the great thing about it is that at that level of chlorine, you don't need to shock it once a week. You don't need to use algaecides. You don't need phosphate removers. You don't need to worry about nitrates. You don't need a separate oxidizer. You don't need all of those things because you got the chlorine at the right level that is preventing everything. Between the chlorine and the borate, it prevents anything from happening.
No, I'm going to say, I think the lack of this whole chlorine lock myth is it's just a lack of understanding of the relationship between conditioner and free chlorine or total chlorine in your pool, right?
Like I started to say, the people that didn't make trichlor back in the day, they started these rumors that cyanuric acid will lock up all your chlorine and it wouldn't work. And the stores loved it because somebody would come in and say, I got algae, and then I got three or four parts per million of chlorine. They go, well, you got chlorine lock. You're going to need to drain the pool, fill it back up, and then you need all these chemicals to put it back in good shape. And the stores loved it. And so they tried that routine to have people not buy trichlor by saying it would just lock up all your chlorine, and you'd start getting algae and bacteria growing and be unsafe if you get too much cyanuric acid in your pool. Well, you know, today we have better understanding and testing and technology. And yes, cyanuric acid does bind up a lot of the chlorine, but there's still plenty of chlorine in the pool to kill everything, take care of everything. And so it doesn't really lock it up. It's kind of like a reservoir of chlorine. You know, it's kind of like having 10,000 soldiers and sending 300 of them into battle at a time. And when those 300 are done, you send in 300 more. You know, or when 200 of them are gone, you send in 200 more. So you're only sending in some, and the chlorine that's in reserve isn't being degraded or used or anything. The sunlight isn't acting upon it when it is in the 97% bound to cyanuric acid. Sunlight isn't destroying it.
That's a great analogy. Like I was saying, it's like, you know, people, they have pools, and I've had people talk to me too and say, oh, chlorine lock. And, you know, I have, you know, 3 parts per million in my pool and I'm still getting algae or I'm still having issues. And it's like, okay, well, where's your conditioner level? Well, my conditioner level is at 100, let's say, for instance. Well, the whole 7.5%, 5%, you know, if your free chlorine isn't 7.5%, then you're not, you're, 3 parts per million of chlorine is not going to do the job. And you
that's right.
Algae. You know, that's so exactly that's where the myth is at. You know, people think, oh, I'm at 3 parts per million. I shouldn't have any issues. I have chlorine lock. No, you need to look at it. You need to understand what the ratio is, you know, and have the
problem. That's right. And people say, well, what's your cyanuric acid level? If it's 100, if you're not using borate, you need 7.5 parts per million of chlorine in the pool minimum. And you need that in there or you're going to get algae growing. That's exactly what happens. And what happens when you use trichlor? This is what really happens. You start out, let's say you start out with 30 parts per million of cyanuric acid. And let's say just for the sake of argument, you're using 10 parts per million of chlorine per week. If you're using 10 parts per million of chlorine per week, you will then be adding 6 parts per million of cyanuric acid to the pool per week, which means in a month, your cyanuric acid level is going up by 25 parts per million. And in 2 months, it's going to go up by 50. So when you start out at 30 parts per million, if you take 7.5% of 30 parts per million, you need about 2 parts per million of chlorine in the pool. But 2 months later, what happens when now your chlorine level is 80 parts per million? 7.5 times 80 parts per million is like 6 parts per million of chlorine. And if you're only putting 2 to 4 in there, now you're going to start getting algae growing. And you're going to start saying, I don't understand, man. I'm keeping the chlorine level at 3, and all of a sudden I got algae. What's going on? And the problem is that your cyanuric acid went up, and you didn't make a compensation by adding more chlorine as your cyanuric acid went up. And that's what you have to do when you use trichlor. You have to keep increasing the chlorine level. And by increasing the chlorine level, you increase the cyanuric acid level, and it just keeps going around and around. If you weren't using the cyanuric acid, a type of chlorine that increases the cyanuric acid, you could keep the same amount of chlorine in the pool all the time.
John, I think this is one of those moments where I would just kind of sit here all day and do this.
It's just
amazing. It's just absolutely
amazing.
That's
the thing. You know, we teach this in our classes. It's in the books. I've been trying for years to tell people, listen, this is the way it is. And if you understand it, you'll be able to take care of your pools a whole lot easier. And it's really not that difficult to understand.
Absolutely. Guys, let's take a quick word from our sponsors. Bob, when we come back, we will continue.
The HyperPole from Ultimate Pool Tools is a pool care pole designed by pool professionals for pool professionals, featuring precision-crafted carbon fiber and stainless steel construction. Go to ultimatepooltools.com or Instagram at Ultimate Pool Tools. Introducing Pool Invoice. Pool Invoice is pool billing software that was created specifically for the pool service and repair industry. It was developed for our industry and only our industry. Pool Invoice was built with recurring billing in mind. You can print, email, text invoices, or even send via WhatsApp. You can add recurring or yearly charges, accept credits, and set up auto pay. You can even see when customers have seen the invoice. It even has a customer portal where they can log in and see, print, and pay invoices. It has all of your customers' information on one page, so you don't need to search through hundreds of invoices looking for the one you need. Just go to the customer's profile, and it's all at your fingertips. It's currently in beta phase, so anyone can use it for free. Just go to poolinvoice.com and request an invitation at the bottom of the page. Pool Invoice was made for you.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking to Bob Lowry, the godfather of water chemistry. We want to thank him for his time. Bob, next question. I saw the video on the Poolman University that you did that chlorine does not raise pH. Can you explain what causes pH to go up?
Sure, I can. That's easy. There are a number of reasons in the pool the pH can go up. But if you're talking about from liquid chlorine, here's what happens when you add liquid chlorine. Understand that liquid chlorine is made by taking sodium hydroxide, which is called lye, or drain cleaner, by taking lye and shooting chlorine gas into it. And the chlorine hangs on to the sodium hydroxide, and it makes sodium hypochlorite. And so now you have sodium hypochlorite, and when you put it into the pool, it again makes sodium hydroxide in the pool, and the chlorine makes hypochlorous acid and hypochlorite ion, which are the abbreviations for them are HOCl and OCL with a little minus as a superscript. And so you have HOCl and OCl, and HOCl is the killing form of chlorine. So when you put the liquid chlorine in the water, you make sodium hydroxide and hypochlorous acid. The pH of the pool goes up because of the sodium hydroxide. And then what happens, and I even used to tell people years and years ago, I told people if you put liquid chlorine in the pool, you're going to need to put in some acid right after it to lower the pH because it's going to raise the pH. And I believed that. And it's true, the pH does go up, but we didn't think what happens next. What happens next is HOCl is a killing form of chlorine. When it kills something, bacteria, algae, mold, mildew, virus, whatever, when it kills something, it eventually goes back to being, it loses the oxygen, and it goes back to being HCl instead of HOCl. And HCl is hydrochloric acid or muriatic acid. So we put in sodium hydroxide today, and tomorrow it makes hydrochloric acid, and the amount of hydrochloric acid is almost equal to the amount of sodium hydroxide that was made, and the two cancel each other out. Liquid chlorine does raise the pH today, but it lowers it tomorrow, and the two are almost equivalent. The amount of actually excess sodium hydroxide is something like 0.03%. So it's not a very big number. So there is a little bit of pH rise, but not anything that you could measure without a meter that measured to a hundredth of a pH unit. So liquid chlorine does not raise the pH of the pool. Neither does calcium hypochlorite. It is a hypochlorite, and when you put it in the water and it dissolves, it makes calcium hydroxide instead of sodium hydroxide, and it makes hypochlorous acid. And tomorrow, the hypochlorous acid becomes hydrochloric acid. It equalizes with the sodium hydroxide that was put in, and the net difference is zero. So there's no change in pH from using either of those two chemicals. And by using them, you are not contributing to the pool being unstable, which is a double negative way to say that by adding it, you're not increasing the pH, so the pH isn't going to go up, and you're not going to need to add acid, and you're not going to have the pH always going up in your pools because you're using liquid acid or calipo. It's not going up because of that. If the pH in your pool is going up, my first response is that you've got one of two problems. Either your alkalinity is too high, because if your alkalinity is too high, it's going to keep pulling your pH up. The other reason is if you've got a lot of aeration and turbulence in the pool, and that can happen because of waterfalls, rock features, spillways, spillovers, negative edge pools, anything where you've got water creating aeration and turbulence. And that aeration and turbulence drives off some of the CO2 that's in the water. And when the chemistry that's in the pool compensates for that loss of CO2, the pH in the pool goes up. So liquid chlorine doesn't change the pH, but alkalinity and turbulence and aeration do.
Can I follow up on that question? Because I have a question. In our market, Bob, there's a lot of the spillovers, the bubblers, a lot of water features. And so we're targeting that 7.5 pH. Now, should we be targeting maybe a 7.4 or 7.3 on our visit to try to offset that rise in pH? Because week after week, we tend to have the 7.8, 7.9, 8.0 when we come back for our visit. Or do we still want to shoot for that target of 7.5?
There are two ways to consider this. And you are the guy that's at the pool. So you may have to make the decision, but here's the reasons. And One is to allow for the drift, which is what you're saying, run the pool at 7.3 or 7.4 so that when you come back, it's 7.6 or 7.7 and not 7.8 or 8.0. So that's one of the ways, is just to set it to try to run it a little lower and let it drift up to what's a normal range. The other thing to do is to lower alkalinity so that the aeration and turbulence are not causing such a big change in pH. So you can, instead of shooting for 90, try using 80. And if 80 doesn't work, try using 70 as a target for total alkalinity. And so you may find that on some pools, because of aeration or whatever, maybe you need to run the pool at 70 alkalinity and still shoot for 7.4 or 7.5 on pH while you're there and let it see how much it drifts up when you come back. So the choice kind of is yours. Do you want to lower alkalinity a little bit, or do you want to lower pH and let it drift? Your decision. But, or maybe a combination of both. You know, maybe if you've been using 90, maybe you could try, if you've been 7.5 and 90, maybe you should try 7.4 and 80, or 7.3 and 70.
Perfect. That makes sense.
I can be a testament to that. We've dropping alkalinity levels and bringing them down. We've had some great success with it. And to still stay within LSI, you know, we've even bumped up our calcium levels a little bit, so that we can buffer that change. And it's helped us tremendously when it comes down, because we have a lot of salt systems on our route, and we have a lot of pools with crazy waterfalls and negative edges and stuff. And the only way, you know, the last thing anybody wants to do is chase pH constantly. So with the addition of borates and then lowering that alkalinity level just a little bit, it's done wonders for us, Zach. So.
Well, and especially, John, on your pools that have chlorine generators on them, we recommend running the LSI at a slightly negative LSI so that you don't get the calcium flakes in the pool. The other thing that we do, at least for calcium flakes, we didn't start out on that discussion, but we kind of ended up there. But the other thing you do is make sure that the cell turns off before the water flow shuts down. And the reason for that is that the cell actually gets hot. It's kind of like a toaster in there. And as long as you got 50 gallons a minute going through, it's cooling it down. But if you shut the pool off, shut the flow off, and shut the, so the water's not moving, the water that's actually in the cell gets pretty hot. And hot water causes scale. And so you kind of boil the water that's in the cell. You don't really boil it. Don't misunderstand. It does not get that hot. But it does get pretty hot. It's over 100 inside the cell. And so at 100, you can have some calcium coming out of solution, and it sticks to the plates. And then if there's enough flow, the calcium comes off of the plate. But if not, when the plates reverse polarity, that calcium comes right off the plate and back into the pool. So you can prevent that by turning the cell off before the water flow stops.
Yeah, it's like a perfect storm in there, right? You got hot water and you got high pH, right?
Yeah, hot water, high pH, and calcium in the water.
Yep.
What's going to happen? Calcium's coming out.
Yep.
Hey, I have one question here. So Dylan over on our instant chat here is asking, question, if your pH is 7.9 and the alkalinity is 90, and due to the 50-degree weather, your LSI is pretty close to zero, are you still at risk for scaling inside the heater? Should you raise the alkalinity and lower the pH? And he's using borates.
You know, at 50-degree water, and if you do have a pH of 7.9, as long as the calcium level is not really high, if you've got a near zero LSI, you're not getting any scale unless they're running the heater a little bit. And again, if the water in the heater header is remaining in that heater header, because you turned the water flow and the heater off together. It's the same thing as we just discussed with the generator. The water inside the heater header gets very hot. And so you form scale inside the heater. So what you want to do, again, they used to actually sell what they called a fireman switch. And what it was when you turn the system down, it left the system on but turned the heater off 5 or 10 minutes before the water flow stopped. And so if you can program it today to do that, depending on whether you've got a, you know, a smart pool or IntelliPool or whatever they're calling them, you need to get the anything that's hot, you need to shut it off before the water flow stops. Otherwise, you can get scale. So 7.9 doesn't scare me as long as you're still at near zero LSI. You're not going to get any scale unless the heater is real hot.
Great. Thanks for that, Bob. Guys, let's, believe it or not, we've been at this already for an hour. Let's take a quick word from our sponsors. Zach, John, when we come back, I want to get your final thoughts.
The sound of you continually pitching pool care poles into the trash. The sound of you using an Ultimate Pool Tools carbon fiber pool care pole for years to come. Go to ultimatepooltools.com or Instagram at Ultimate Pool Tools.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are talking to the legend Bob Lowry. We've been kind of going to school again today. Love it. Love these podcasts, Bob. Zach, let me have your final thoughts.
Yeah, so I know I've said this a million times, but this information is pure gold. And the thing that I love is that I continue to learn more every time we talk water chemistry. And it's kind of brought me to the realization that I don't think I could possibly ever learn it all. And as always, Bob, thank you for taking the time to continue to educate us. I really appreciate it. And I feel super fortunate to be able to learn directly from you. So again, thank you. And, you know, the last thing I have is, Edgar, I'm sorry your daughter is leaving the nest. You know, as you mentioned, my kids are still young, so I have a while at this point. And I truly do dread the day they leave. And I also dread the day that I'm no longer cool in their eyes. I think my daughter's starting to approach that. But that being said, I don't think you can ground her. You might be able to bribe her, but I don't think you can ground her.
I don't know. I'm thinking, depending on how much feedback I get, I think I might take that road and try to test it. I appreciate that, Zach. John.
Well, again, wow, what a great episode. I mean, we still have a list of questions that we haven't even gone through. But, you know, as far as every single month, I look forward to doing these podcasts because, again, we get to talk about one of the things that I really love and I totally geek out on is chemistry. And just want to thank Bob again. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time every single month to sit with us knuckleheads and to go through these questions and answer them for us in a very, very good way, you know, because it's hard when it comes down to like explaining these things, because, you know, I spend all day talking to a lot of different pool guys on the phone, and the majority of the day, at least before, was, you know, always kind of trying to explain everything and breaking it down in ways that people can understand it. I think we do a pretty good job of doing that. Again, I just want to say thank you again for your time. And I learned a lot today again, and I look forward to the next one.
Well, I'm glad to do it, as I've said before, and we'll probably say again, water is my passion. And I believe it or not, I'm still learning about water too. And I learned something practically every day about water, but I'm not afraid to pass along my information and give it to you guys. I have the ability to take complex chemistry issues and chemistry and digest them and put them back into terms that, you know, the average guy, the average pool guy or girl can understand. And, you know, I've talked to other chemists and they're great with chemistry, but they can't do what I do. They can't reduce it to something to make you understand it. And I don't know whether it's an ability or a knack or whatever it is, but I've been able to do that for about 40 years. And I keep doing it. Every time I learn something new, I figure out a way to say it to you guys so you get it. And pass it along and try to put it together into a whole thing. You can listen to a guy tell you about water chemistry, but he's only going to pick one little subject and tell you about it, and he's not integrating it and giving you the insight of how it all works together. And that's what's really important, because you're out there putting it all together in the pool. And when you have some guy tell you, hey, you can keep a higher cyanuric acid level, yeah, he's right, but you have too much compensation to do to change it to be able to keep the water stable. And that's the name of the game in pool service business, is stable water. And we want you to be able to understand how to do that.
I am going to be in total agreement. You know, looking back, and I've said this before, looking back when I started, there was things that I learned, and it was almost one of those, you learn this and that's how it is because that's how it is. But being able to have Bob on and have him break it down and explain it, that even now there's a lot of times that I just kind of sit there and go, now that makes sense as to why that needed to be, where before I wasn't able to find that information. And I think that's why, you know, having Bob on these podcasts, talk to the guys and explain it to them, John, it just really kind of takes everything to the next level, especially with water chemistry when we're out there starting the business and trying to learn all the aspects of water chemistry. I think these podcasts are just huge, and they're one of my favorites.
And it excites you too, because look, instead of just being a pool guy or pool gal and going out there and dumping chlorine or doing this or doing that, understanding what you're doing and why you're doing it, right? Become a chemist, right? And that's how you build who you are, and you can sell yourself and add value to your service, right? When you really truly understand how the water works. That's the name of the game for us. You know, our pool service and our company, you know, is understanding water and why it works and how to do things and why things work the way they work, and how each thing is attached to another thing, and how they feed off each other, or hurt each other. And it's just, you know, this is the nuts and bolts of it. If you guys really want to be great at what you do when it comes down to pool service, anybody can go out there and get a net and net leaves. I tell customers that every time when we're out there and we're doing interviews, we're doing new customer quotes. I go, you can hire anybody to get a net and a vacuum to vacuum your pool and net it. But you can't just hire anybody, you know, when it comes down to maintaining safe, healthy, you know, and crystal clear water. You know, understanding this and listening to it and going over and over and over and over again, it just kind of gives you like a sense of purpose. I don't know. Maybe it's just me or just kind of weird, but.
No, and then you get to
I love.
Yeah, and you get to a pool and you're having a problem with the pool, and it's not just, okay, let me check this, and check this. It's like, you know what to check and what else to look for within that thing that you're looking at. And that just gives you the ability to, like Bob says, you know, make your job a lot easier. And then second, save money. Because obviously that's, you know, normally what we do is when you start, you have problems with the pool. And what do? Just dump, 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 trying to figure out what it is that's going to work. And then something works and you're like, oh, that works. So then you have a problem with another pool and you're like, hey, this worked for the other one. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to dump this in.
Yeah. Or just search. Everybody wants to search online or figure out or go to a pool store or a supply store and find the next snake oil, right? And this happy cure. Okay, get this and get that. And all these other products and stuff that we add and we put into the pools and we do, they're all Band-Aids really to the real problem.
You know, and creating other problems.
That's correct.
That's the truth. You know, I tell people, listen, all you need to take care of your pool is liquid chlorine, acid, bicarb, and borate, and some air for aeration when you need to raise the pH. That's all you need to take care of your pools. Really. What about algaecides? And if you don't need an algaecide if you're taking care of the pool, right? You don't need a phosphate remover unless you've got a really bad phosphate problem. You don't need it. You don't need a separate oxidizer. You don't need to shock the pool once a week. The pool's already running at break points, so you don't need to do that. So, you know, we make it stable, we make it safe, and you don't need all those things. And the pool stores hate it, and the distributors hate it. And the distributors in this industry, I hope they wake up soon, but they've been dragging their feet and not handling borate. Because when you buy borate, you're not going to be buying all those other things, all those algaecides and phosphate removers and all those other things. You're not going to need them. So they're going to sell you borate. Now you're not going to need all these other things. So they don't want to handle borate.
Bob's going to get a hit put out on us.
And I think that they're going to come full circle on it, because I think it's going to come back and bite them. And the reason is that, how are you going to feel about your distributor when you find out he was withholding something from you that really works in all of your pools?
Yeah.
And you're going to start saying, you know, that distributor wouldn't sell me borate and kept, you know, not having it, and wouldn't sell it to me unless I wanted a whole pallet or something. And now it's commonplace and it's in all pools, and he wouldn't sell it to me. Maybe I should find a different distributor.
I think it also comes back to education. And I think that's why we're kind of so passionate about it, because, you know, you can have the distributors doing their thing, but if the individual pool guy is not getting educated and learning about all this, they're going to just kind of continue on the same path. They could just kind of, you know, keep kind of learning, like you say, Bob, on some of these seminars and stuff, but they really don't go deep and they don't dive deep into explaining why and really have them change their mindset.
Yeah. So they have to know what works and then buy the products they need to take care of the pools. And the problem is that they're new, they don't know, whatever. They go into the distributor and they go, I got algae in my pool. First thing the guy does is say, here's this algaecide that costs $20 a bottle. And never tells them, hey, listen, you're running your cyanuric acid too high and your chlorine not enough. They just sell them an algaecide. And that's, as you just said, that's a Band-Aid. What they need to do is fix the problem.
Yeah, it is. It's like waking up every morning and not turning on the light, you know what I mean, and banging your head on the wall and getting a headache and having to take Advil. You know, oh, I'll just take some Advil and do it every single day. Well, just don't bang your head in the wall anymore and you won't have to take Advil. You know what I mean? Come on.
So anyway, that's what we need to do. And I just think we need to do, as I've said many times, we need to start doing the right thing. And the right thing is taking care of water the easy way, the right way, the science-based way.
In complete agreement. All right, guys, John, Zach, Bob, thank you so much for your time. We are at the end of the podcast, and we will catch you guys next week.
All right. Have a good one.
See you guys later.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Pool Nation, all rights reserved. No part of this podcast may be reproduced in a verbal or nonverbal way. May not be distributed. It may not be distributed in any social media platforms or transmitted in any other forms or any other means, including recording or other electronic or mechanical methods, without the prior written permission of Pool Nation.
Thanks for listening to the Pool Nation podcast. You can listen to us live every Friday here at 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us at Pool Nation or poolnationpodcast.com or Instagram at pool.nation.